Rockers in Recovery Media is dedicated to carrying the message of addiction recovery through music, news, events, and festivals taking place within and not limited to the clean and sober community.
Welcome to Monday Night, Radical Recovery, the Treatment Crisis. Your host for tonight's show is Jack Kelly. Jack, welcome to the show and have a great show, brother.
Thank you, John, and thank you for giving the opportunity to pass on some hopeful messages to people that are out there. After Buddha had his spiritual awakening, somebody asked him, "Are you a god?" And Buddha replied, "No, I'm awake." Well, I'd say that just about every American is aware that easy access to prescription drugs created an opioid crisis in our country. But not too many people are aware of the collateral damage created by this crisis. So I think it is time for us to wake up to the fact that we now have a treatment center crisis. Treatment centers are the place where we send our loved ones to get the help they need when we find out that they have become addicted to pills, alcohol, or illegal drugs. However, 90% of the time, they don't get the help they need. And how do we know that? Because 90% of the time, they relapse shortly after leaving treatment. A parasite is an organism that obtains the nutrients it needs by draining the life out of another organism, the host. And during the last several years, after thousands of people died from drug overdoses, it was discovered that many treatment centers and halfway houses were owned by parasites. And these people drained the life out of vulnerable alcoholics and drug addicts, their host, by billing their insurance companies for billions of dollars for services they never received or failing to provide them with the services they needed to become addiction survivors. And the origin of this crisis can be traced back to December 12, 1995, a new infamous day in our country's history. The other two infamous days were December 7, 1942, when the Japanese bombed Pearl Harbor, and when terrorists struck the Twin Towers on 9/1/2001. December 12, 1995 is the day that the Food and Drug Administration approved the opioid OxyContin, and the manufacturer said it was not addictive, which turned out to be a very, very big lie. And it hit the market in 1996, and in its first year, OxyContin accounted for $45 million in sales for its manufacturer, Stanford-based pharmaceutical company, Purdue Pharma. And in the year 2000, that number ballooned to $1.1 billion, an increase of over 2,000% in just 4 years. In 2010, the profits inflated even further to $3.1 billion. And around that time, Florida had become the unofficial pill mill capital of the country. Oxycodone was being passed out like candy as part of a prescription cocktail that was very popular with addicts. Was being abused in all corners of Florida, which had become a destination for pill users and drug dealers from states with tougher regulations. 2000 alone, 2010, manufacturers shipped more than 650 million oxycodone pills to the Sunshine State. That's more than 34 pills for every resident of the state. By 2011, Florida had 856 pain clinics, and the owners of those pain clinics became legal drug dealers who became millionaires without any interference from local, state, the federal authority. So with addiction came more treatment centers, and because of the weather, South Florida became the mecca for recovery. Before 2018, Florida had more treatment centers and halfway houses than any other region of the country. Then this perilous situation we face as alcoholics and drug addicts. Imagine being diagnosed with a brain tumor that required immediate surgery. You schedule an appointment with a brain surgeon, and he tells you that 90% of his patients die on the operating table. Would you schedule the surgery? I doubt it. More than likely, you would look for the nearest exit. But what if every brain surgeon you met with had the same results? You would then have to pick one, cross your fingers, and hope for the best. If you have an addiction to pills, alcohol, or illegal drugs, that is the reality you are faced with. Pick a treatment center, cross your fingers, and hope for the best, because the industry, on average, has a 90% failure rate. Producers of the HBO film Rehab spent 3 years visiting treatment centers across the country, and they came to the conclusion that the failure rate was even higher, 93%. So I think the problem that we face as alcoholics and addicts is that instead of exploring new ways to treat addiction, treatment centers continue to hire therapists who have a master's degree in social work and mental health counseling, which may look good on paper, but that policy hasn't changed the recovery rate. We still have a 90% failure rate. And many of the therapists that I've spoken with that have these master's degrees have no personal experience with addiction, and they don't support 12-step programs that are promoted by many treatment centers, and with good reason. They don't understand how any of the alcoholics and drug addicts they work with will ever get well if, on a daily basis, they're reminded about how powerless they are and that they will never recover from their addiction to pills, alcohol, or illegal drugs. And they haven't been brainwashed into believing many of the multiple myths that are now promoted and reinforced at many AA and NA meetings. And these myths are identified in a book I wrote in 2012, Radical Recovery, 12 Recovery Myths, The Addiction Survivor's Guide to the 12 Steps. To put this in a different perspective, in the Bible, there are stories about the apostles healing people. But there are some people they couldn't heal, those who were possessed by some powerful, destructive spirit or force. And this is the dilemma faced by many therapists who have master's degrees. The people that they see every day are possessed by which shows up in the form of obsessive thoughts, compulsive feelings, and physical cravings. Now, if you think about this, love is said to be the most powerful force in the universe, but it is not. And anyone who has an addiction to pills, alcohol, or illegal drugs will confirm this. That once that substance gets inside their bodies, cravings take control of their lives. And at that point, the cravings are much more powerful than the love they have for their spouse, partners, children, or family. I don't know if you remember the film The Exorcist, but let's take a look at that for a second. The word exorcist in the dictionary, here's how it's defined: to free a person or place from evil spirits or malignant influences. And if you look up the word malignant, it's defined as something that causes harm, suffering, or distress. Something that is characterized by uncontrolled growth, something that causes death, like addiction or the bubonic plague. Now, I think that you would certainly agree with me that addiction is certainly a malignant influence. It causes harm, suffering, and distress. It is characterized by uncontrolled growth, and it causes death if it's not treated properly. And it is definitely not a kind spirit. According to the National Institute on Drug Abuse, in 2016, more than 64,000 people died from drug overdoses. And that is more than the 58,000 Americans who died during the 10 years that we were in Vietnam. As well as that, each year, more than 100,000 people die from untreated alcoholism. So how are we supposed to treat this disease? We got a 90% failure rate. In the book Alcoholics Anonymous, it says treating a disease that is cunning, baffling, and powerful, in essence, is going to require more than a master's degree in mental health. It requires special training. If you take a look at two of the greatest assets that we possess as human beings, it's free will and freedom. But once we become addicted to pills, alcohol, or illegal drugs, we sacrifice these assets on the altar of addiction, and our brain gets hijacked. We then lose our ability to reason. I can lose a job, a career, a marriage, a relationship, and we revert to functioning like primitive baboons. We're controlled by impulses and instincts. So if we take a look at the nature of addiction, it is a very, very powerful force, and a very, very powerful force is inside us, not outside us. If we don't guide, it destroys us. However, if we're given tools and resources that enable us to guide and direct this powerful force, we have what I call a Christopher Columbus experience. It opens up a new world, a world of imagination, intuition, creativity, and power. So, what do we do? I think we need to explore, and that's what I've been doing. I began working in the addiction industry in the year 2000, trying to find ways that work, tools and resources that give us the ability to rise from the ashes of addiction, just like the phoenix. In case you're not familiar with the story of the phoenix, it's a bird that was consumed by fire, died, and then rose from the ashes. And that's really the power that we have access to as human beings. We had this power the moment we were conceived. We had it the day we were born. And then we went through this thing called life. And we got seduced, like everybody else on the planet, by one or more of those seven deadly sins. We have lust to deal with, greed, envy, sloth, powerful, powerful forces. So if we take a look at the addiction industry, if you take a look at the medical profession, first of all, when a doctor gets into medical school, well, the first thing they do is they take the Hippocratic Oath, which is to first do no harm. And unfortunately, owners and operators of pain clinics, treatment centers, and halfway houses have never been required to take this oath. So whether you needed brain surgery or treatment for an addiction to pills, alcohol, or illegal drugs, you would more than likely make the assumption that the people you met with actually wanted to help you. However, as I mentioned earlier, many parasites, unsavory, unscrupulous, and greedy predators got involved in this billion-dollar treatment industry in South Florida. And as word spread among the predator community, treatment centers began to open up all across the country, as well as halfway houses. So within a very short period of time, we had 14,000 treatment centers spread out across 50 states and generating, according to the federal government, $35 billion in profits annually. And for too many of them, the goal was not to help alcoholics and drug addicts recover from their addiction, but to make money. And they made lots of it. In Colorado, where much of the addiction industry is unregulated, Chris Batham founded Community Recovery, and he became known as the Rehab Mogul. He opened up more than 20 sober living facilities in both Colorado and California, and he is now facing up to 65 years in prison after being convicted of sexually assaulting or exploiting 7 patients, and not only exploiting them sexually, but offering them controlled substances. In 2017, after enough people died from drug overdoses, the state and federal governments finally got involved in Florida. And as a result of that involvement, 120 treatment centers in South Florida were shut down because of their unprofessional, illegal, or shady business practices. For those who survived, one I'm familiar with, the treatment center of the Palm Beaches in Lakeland, Florida, the flow of new patients came to a trickle, 120-bed facility, and on March 9, 2018, they had 15 patients. Wow. And it's not just hitting Florida at this point. It's hitting treatment centers all across the country because people have lost their trust. They're not sure if they send somebody to a treatment center, if they're going to get the help they need, or if they're just being exploited and it's their own by people who are more interested in making money than in helping them. So the reality is that America is not losing the war on drugs. It's our children, our parents, our spouses, our aunts and uncles that are losing this war. So when you take the combined death rate of 100,000 people a year dying from untreated alcoholism, 64,000 people dying from overdoses, that comes out to 450 people a day dying from a disease properly treated can be put into complete remission. And there was a story that was released here in Florida about a young lady. She enrolled in one of the South Florida treatment programs in 2015. Her name was Allison. And when she came here, she had high hopes of getting her life in order and starting a new chapter in life. But instead of getting that health care, Allison found herself being recruited by one recovery resident after another after she left treatment. And what happened here in South Florida is that a string of shady drug treatment facilities systematically overcharged her mother's health insurance policy for expensive and often unnecessary procedures and tests. To Allison's family, she was a daughter, a beloved sister, someone who made them laugh, and a young woman they desperately hoped would get the help that she needed. When she arrived in South Florida from Illinois, just a year before she died, she was seeking treatment for her addiction, and her parents believed that the treatment she received, which was paid for by her family's excellent insurance, is what ultimately caused her death. So the light that Allison and her parents saw at the end of a very dark tunnel turned out to be a train that was filled with greedy and unscrupulous predators that destroyed their lives. So this is how the insurance scam worked. Once an unscrupulous treatment center reeled in a patient, they billed their insurance companies for tens of thousands of dollars for often questionable counseling. They also billed for often unnecessary drug screens and exotic laboratory tests. Some treatment centers not only overlook drug use, they encourage it. Well, why would they do that? Because it meant more money in their pocket. As many mothers and fathers learned too late, South Florida's billion-dollar drug treatment industry was a minefield with fatal overdoses, fraud, and unscrupulous operators. It was an investigation by NBC News, and they found that many of these vulnerable drug addicts became unsuspecting victims in an insurance fraud mill. Brokers and sober homeowners lured naive drug addicts like Allison into their web of greed, fraud, and deceit. So how'd they do it? They did it by offering them free rent, grocery store gift cards, cigarettes, and manicures in exchange for going to specific treatment centers who paid kickbacks for every client that was sent to them. And sad to say, it's not unusual these days to see someone come through treatment three or four times in the same year. Why? I think there are three dominant reasons. One, addiction, like diabetes, is a terminal disease if it is left untreated. But one of the major differences between addiction and diabetes is that there are no benefits to having diabetes. However, there are benefits to living an addictive lifestyle. You don't have to deal with reality or the stressful events that we as human beings have to encounter each day. You can create your own reality by using pills, alcohol, or drugs to numb all your emotions. And within seconds or minutes, you can escape from whatever mental, emotional, physical, or spiritual pain you may be experiencing, such as loneliness, resentments, worry, anger, depression, fear, self-pity, guilt, or shame. When someone seeks treatment for a terminal disease, they want to get better, but this is not true with addiction. Just because someone shows up at a treatment center doesn't mean that they are motivated to get better. So perhaps one of the first requirements a treatment center should look for in hiring a therapist is whether or not they have the ability to motivate patients. So why do patients need motivation? At many of the AA and NA meetings and treatment centers they go to, the message that is hammered into their brains is that they are powerless over their addiction without a clear explanation of what that really means. Therefore, we have many alcoholics and drug addicts that interpret that idea of powerlessness as helplessness. And if you're helpless, why even try? So for many people coming into treatment, it ends up being approached as a summer camp where unmotivated patients get their insurance company to pay $30,000 while they spend 30 days glorifying their drug use and sharing all the ways that they got high. I believe that there is a valid explanation for this. While active in their addiction, an alcoholic or drug addict, all the addict, alcoholic or drug addict has to share is their past, because there is no future in addiction. It's just a regrettable past that keeps repeating itself over and over and over again. And after the body and brain recover from the beating they receive by the chemicals and alcohol and drugs, many go back to living their addictive lifestyle. And for some, that begins the day-to-day treatment. The insurance industry has spent billions of dollars treating people who are not motivated to recover from their disease. And many of the treatment center owners laughed all the way to the bank. And I can't put the blame on all of the blame on alcoholics and addicts. When a patient returns to treatment after relapse, it's not unusual to hear a therapist say, "What are you going to do different this time?" And I believe the first question that we have to ask in an industry, what are we going to do different this time? Because what we are doing isn't working. So I think that's one of the reasons why we have such a high relapse rate, because you have many people who are coming to treatment that are really not motivated to get better. They just want to recoup, go back out, and go back to living that addictive lifestyle. The second reason I believe that we have a high relapse rate is that AA was the first 12-step program, and the solution they found worked very well for them, and it can be summed up in one sentence. When the spiritual malady is overcome, we get straightened out mentally and physically. Now, if you were to ask 1,000 owners of clinical or clinical directors of treatment centers what the spiritual malady was, you would be lucky if you could find one person who could answer that question. Failure, right? And somebody says, when the spiritual malady is overcome, we get straightened out mentally and physically, it might be important to explore what that spiritual malady is. And it has nothing to do with religion. So why do treatment centers continue sending alcoholics and drug addicts to Alcoholics Anonymous and Narcotics Anonymous? Where else are they going to send them? We're also in the programs that hardly anybody is aware of what they are. One of the truths that the original members of AA learned in the School of Hard Knocks was that addiction is a cunning, baffling, and powerful disease. It has been replaced with one of the myths which are so often reinforced at AA and NA meetings. My disease is doing push-ups. Now think about it. Common sense would suggest that if you have a disease that is cunning, baffling, and powerful, it doesn't have to do push-ups. You're the one that has to do push-ups. So to be successful, treatment has to be approached not as a summer camp, but as a boot camp. That's a place where alcoholics and addicts are giving a life preserver. And with that life preserver would come a set of life-saving skills and resources that would enable them to become free from the slavery of addiction. Einstein said that the greatest mind-altering drug is truth. So here's a truth that you need to digest if you're an alcoholic or a drug addict. Drinking or using drugs starts out as a habit and is simply a luxury that we can afford. But over time, that luxury becomes a necessity, which means that we no longer want to use alcohol or drugs. We need to use them just to make it through the day. So when we cross that line, drinking or using drugs is no longer a voluntary act. It becomes an obsession and compulsion, which means we have entered the world of addiction. So the big elephant in the room of the treatment industry is aftercare. What happens after somebody leaves treatment? And this is where I have spent the last 9 years trying to develop programs that can help alcoholics and drug addicts do that. And there are three companies that I worked with, began working with in 2008. One is called Harmonial, and their website is www.harmonial.net. The other is HeartMath. Their website is www.oneword.com. And last but not least is a company that produces what I call the Serenity Lounge. And you can check their website out. It's www.soltectlounge.com. And I have been able to convince one of the treatment centers here in South Florida to use all three of these programs. And I know that they're using all three of the programs because I'm in there using these programs with the patients. And these programs are very empowering. And the treatment center that has agreed to do this is Treatment Partners of America. And you can check out their website also. So the traditional methods that we have been using for so many years don't work. And the original members of AA found the solution. They said that if you have an addiction to pills, alcohol, or drugs, you may be suffering from something which only a spiritual experience will conquer. So the big obstacle here is that word spiritual, because many people see that word, they hear that word, and they associate it with religion. And again, it has nothing to do with religion. So what is this, quote, spiritual experience? And it's explained very clearly in the book Alcoholics Anonymous by one of the greatest psychiatrists of the 20th century, Dr. Carl Jung. In working with an alcoholic for 6 months in Europe, he left Europe, came back home. On the way back home, he got drunk, and he thought he had solved all his problems. He went back, saw Dr. Jung, and said, "Can you help me?" And Dr. Carl Jung said, "No." And it was like the gates of hell closed on him. He said, "There's nothing you can do." He said, "Well, over the centuries, alcoholics have had what are called vital spiritual experience." So here's the vital spiritual experience, what that means, spiritual experience. It shows up in the form of huge emotional displacements and rearrangements. And that, if you're an alcoholic or an addict, is what you need to do. Gain access to tools and resources that enable you to experience these huge emotional changes. And the three therapies that I mentioned do this, each one of them. in about 20 minutes. How long does it last? Some people an hour. To some people 8 hours. To some people a day. And then some people where it lasted a week. But the key with these programs, it's like if you're going to the gym to get in good shape, once you get in good shape, you keep going to the gym. So whichever one of these programs you feel most comfortable with, the key is to keep using it on a daily basis. And the beauty is that all three of these programs can be used in the comfort of your own homes. So with that, I want to sign off and wish you a very successful evening.
Rockers in Recovery Radio is based on opinion only and is not meant to treat or diagnose any health or mental health issue of any kind. If you feel you need help for any health-related issues, please contact a physician or mental health professional. The opinions expressed by our guests are not necessarily those of Rockers in Recovery.